Of the tens of thousands of Rohingya fleeing persecution in Myanmar, many have suffered horrific violence, including rape, which the military stands accused of using as a weapon of war. Some 610,000 Rohingya have fled across the border to Bangladesh, where they're tightly packed into makeshift refugee camps that are now some of the largest in the world. Conditions are basic at best, and aid agencies are struggling to provide assistance. Australian doctor Deborah Blackmore from the International Committee of the Red Cross runs the biggest mobile health clinic operating at the border. She joins us now. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Blackmore. We hear a lot about the conditions in these camps being some of the worst in the world. Give us a snapshot of what it's like there.
Indeed. It's amongst the worst situations I've ever seen in the work that I've been doing for many years. The people have arrived, and when they were first arriving, in fact, we were in the middle of the monsoon, and so there was mud and rain everywhere, and in fact, one of the first mobile clinics that we organised required us to hike in an hour and a half to the site where we were working, and we were knee-deep in mud getting there. So you can imagine what it was like for the people on the ground. Many of the people as well were initially, when they arrived, not under any shelter. Some of them were fortunate enough to have plastic tarpaulins that they could huddle under. And then many of them, when they finally were able to build temporary shelters, were often three or four families in one very small space. Many of them didn't have water. Most of them hadn't eaten for a while. So you can imagine it was just really quite a horrific situation on the ground, but things are improving slowly, but the need is still huge.
What proportion of people coming across the border need some kind of medical treatment?
Look, our clinics really have been quite overwhelmed with the numbers of people that we're seeing. In most clinics that we're doing on a daily basis, we're seeing between 400 and 500 patients in a clinic, which is just huge. And just to give you an example of what that compares to, some of the health facilities that exist, the government health facilities that exist on the ground, in an outpatient clinic in a normal day will have seen 300 or 400 patients. So some of our clinics have even seen over 600 patients in a day, and every time we go back we're seeing that same number of patients. We've got sort of rotating rosters going to different areas now. And every time we go, there are large numbers of patients who are coming, you know, and at different times it will be respiratory tract infections on one visit, a diarrheal disease on another, skin infections on another. So part of what we do is to deal with those, but also to work with our various departments in the organisation and the movement as a whole. So when we find that there are problems with diarrhea or skin disease, we know that there's a problem with water supply, and so the aim is to try and bring in our water and sanitation teams to deliver hygiene kits so that they can wash with soap. We, you know, put in water pumps and tube wells in order for them to get clean water, latrines so that there's no contamination of the water, that kind of thing.
I mentioned in the introduction that there are lots of reports of many people fleeing, particularly women, who've been subjected to rape and sexual assault. Are you seeing those sorts of cases as well?
Look, obviously our movement as a whole is concerned with the media reports we've had about that, and our aim is certainly to meet needs on the ground. As you can appreciate, responding initially to something as significant as that requires, you know, good things in place, like privacy, that kind of thing. And unfortunately, the situations as they are in the camps at the moment are such that it's a very open sort of clinic setting. It's very hard to get privacy. And so what we've been doing is generally disseminating information to the communities about services that are available outside of our clinic that the people can access in order to actually get further treatment in a private, confidential and supportive way if those things have happened.
There's an accusation that this is being done by the Myanmar military in a systematic and very deliberate manner. Is that what you're seeing? I mean, are you actually seeing evidence of that to back up that claim? You're talking about the process for which you refer women who have been, you know, have gone through these kind of experiences to. But is that something you're picking up on the ground? Obviously, women who have gone through pretty horrendous experiences come for medical help as well. You know, they're not sort of generalised injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, And what I can say is that in our clinic sort of set up, because we are working in fairly remote areas with really limited, physical resources to provide spaces, we haven't heard lots of those stories in clinical consultations. But what I can tell you is that our movement partners through various partner national societies on the ground have certainly in the camp areas set up spaces for women to come and talk about those things, to follow up their psychological well-being and their medical care in a safe and secure environment where it can be followed through fully. Because as you can appreciate, I'm sure, that the last thing that we want to do as medical professionals is to open up wounds that potentially are going to cause more damage in the long run. So we need to make sure that those services are in place. And I know that the aid agencies working on the ground are working really hard to make sure that women find spaces to talk about those things in terms of the stories that we've heard and the opportunity for them. And look, certainly many of the people we're seeing, women as well, have been separated from family, from children and husbands, and so we're working really hard to try and actually make sure that they're reunited so some of those other stresses are taken off them as well.
What sort of condition are children coming in? Because we hear, we obviously know that children are very much part of this story. What kind of condition are you seeing these children come into the camps?
I think there's been serious concern about the number of children who are struggling with malnutrition, and a recent survey by another aid organisation showed that the numbers are increasingly concerning. I have to say that in the clinics where we've been, children generally, they certainly make up a huge proportion of the numbers of patients we see. So basically of the 24,000 that we've seen thus far, almost 50% of the patients are under the age of 15. So they're huge numbers. But most of the conditions we're seeing them with again are respiratory tract infections, diarrheal disease, skin disease. And in the groups of people that we've seen on the ground, there haven't been huge numbers of malnourished children. And in some of the communities that we've been in, quite a lot of the families remain intact, which has been a great thing.
We've seen today that China has joined calls for a ceasefire in Rakhine State so that those who've fled can return home. Do the people you're meeting want to go home? Would they feel safe enough to do that?
I think certainly some of the people that we're working with on the border are very keen to go back to their homes, definitely. I think anybody wants to go home, and I think that would be certainly what some of the people that we've seen are very keen to do.
And there's an appeal running at the moment which the ABC is part of. What would you say to someone who's listening to this and thinking about donating?
Look, I would say that the needs are really huge on the ground, and we are struggling to meet all of those needs. And the Bangladesh community has made a huge effort to welcome so many of these people into the community, and they're really struggling as well. So some of the work that we are doing with the ICRC and our movement partners is to make sure that we're also looking after these host communities and donating money so that we can direct it to where the need is the greatest is one way of doing it.
Dr. Blackmore, thank you so much for sharing your insights.
No problem, Patricia. Thank you very much.
That's Dr. Deborah Blackmore from the International Committee for the Red Cross speaking to me from Bangladesh. And we mentioned the ABC has partnered with the UNHCR, the Red Cross and the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade for the Myanmar-Bangladesh Crisis Appeal. Every dollar raised will be matched by the federal government. So that puts the onus on you. The more you donate, of course, the more they match. So if you'd like to donate, please go to abc.net.au/appeals.